Help me.
The voice hammered the inside of Christy Roth's skull now. The pain had increased in the short amount of time Ryan had been gone. Christy blinked back tears and struggled to hang on to her resolve to watch her lover's back.
I'm dying. I don't want to be alone. Please answer me. I know you're there.
A picture formed in Christy's mind. A woman stood wrapped in thin gray fog tendrils that obscured her features. Her age could have been anything from 20 to 60. Her long blonde hair wrapped tightly around her head, clinging to her. She held her arms out in supplication. Christy struggled to see past the woman in the fog, concentrating on the broken terrain of the villa again.
Why don't you help me?
I can't. I'd get chilled.
No. Come.
No. Ryan needs me.
Who's Ryan?
Ryan's my lover. My life.
Impossible. The Chosen don't mate.
Christy peered hard into the fog in her mind, burning holes through it now. The woman's face cleared. Her complexion was nothing short of perfection, a confection of vanilla brushed with a hint of a rose. Christy had never seen a woman who had looked like her. Never seen anyone who looked so unreal.
Gaia, am I hallucinating? Have I caused everyone to come out here following a fever dream?
You have taken vows of chastity.
No.
Some of the pain Christy was feeling from the woman ebbed, but she felt the woman's confusion in there now.
But your power! Everyone knows mating with a man will break your power. How dare you throw your gift away so cheaply?
The vision in Christy's head thinned and became translucent. She saw the broken-down buildings in front of her again, grayed out, as though they had no color. A curious itch trailed through her mind unexpectedly. She felt chilled by it, and nauseous and burning bile to the back of her throat.
You speak the truth. You are not one of us.
No, I'm not. Who are you?
Florin. I am one of the Chosen.
What Chosen?
You do not know?
No.
But your power! How could you have it and not know of us?
I received my power from my mother.
The strange sound came from the area where Ryan had gone. Christy concentrated on the .38 in her fist. It was solid and secure. She had to stay rooted in reality if she was going to help Ryan. She shifted on top of the flattened building, but her equilibrium was distorted, and she felt too weak to get to her feet.
Ah! What's wrong?
It is the Slaggers. They think I'm a Doomie.
Doomies were muties who exhibited paranormal powers, generally hinging on an ability to foretell disastrous events in the near and distant future. Often, they were considered to actually bring bad fortune to those around them, rather than to merely predict it. Christy had worn the label herself.
Who are the Slaggers?
The men who captured me. Cold hearts of this region. They are...
Instinctively, Christy reached for the woman's voice in her mind. Contact was made, feeling as much like a caress as her sentient hair coiling around her neck.
You are alone?
Yes.
Why?
Because there is no one else. No one else.
Christy felt the woman's thoughts become disjointed. She struggled to maintain the contact. As the woman drew away, it felt as though a vacuum opened in her mind, maybe powerful enough to draw down her mind with it. The thought scared her.
Were you always alone?
No.
Christy's eyes searched through the haze of her vision to the area where Ryan and Jack had disappeared. Only then did she become aware of how slowly her heart seemed to beat. Then she realized the conversation taking place in her mind had to have been taking place much faster than she realized.
There were others. We never go out alone.
Where are they?
Dead.
How?
The Slaggers killed Drusella today. Wolves brought Artemis down nearly a week ago.
An image of a rock-covered grave appeared in Christy's mind. Three women, one of them the blonde she thought was Florin, stood above the grave. All of the women wore some kind of white robes.
Three of you?
Of course. There are always the three. There is much power in that number.
Who were the chosen?
There is no time to explain. I am dying.
Maybe not. If there's a way, maybe we can help.
It is too late for me, child.
It's never too late.
One of the chosen always knows her time. That is one of our gifts and one of our curses.
Give up and you might as well cut your own throat.
I'm giving up only on this hold in the mortal realm. Another life awaits me. One much better than this.
Better, if you believe.
And you do not.
Christy didn't answer, though she felt Florin already knew. Mother Sonia's teachings about Gaia remained strong in Christy, provided her a cornerstone of strength and belief.
I sense you do believe.
Because I have seen what Gaia can do.
Gaia? You worship Gaia?
I pay her my respects.
How is it then that you are not one of the chosen?
You know of Gaia?
All the chosen know of Gaia. She is the Earth Mother, who binds us all, ties us, one to another. Only most are too blind to see.
I can't say I completely agree with you. Gaia is one source of power, but I've seen a number of other belief systems during my travels that seemed as strong to me.
Sacrilege! Gaia is more than a belief system. Gaia, give me strength that I have only you to lean on, Christy Roth.
How do you know my name?
There are many things I know about you now.
You've been in my private thoughts, haven't you?
You're one of the chosen, whether you admit it or not.
How can you be so sure?
Because the chosen can always recognize each other. It is only one of our ways. If there were more time, perhaps I could explain to you what you have missed.
I don't know you or the chosen.
No.
Do you know about my mother?
Sonia.
Yes.
Christy's heart leapt. The mother Sonia had disappeared from Harmony years earlier, even left rumors of her death in her wake. There was no proof that she was dead.
I only know of Sonia what I've discerned in your mind.
She was not one of the chosen then.
Perhaps she had another name. I can't see her clearly in your mind.
Maybe because I only have very early memories of my mother. Even those may be tainted by wishes and stories I've heard from relatives. But if she had been one of the chosen, she would have returned there, wouldn't she?
She bore you, child. Your mother would not have been allowed back among the chosen. Now hush. There is much I must do, and I have precious little time to do it.
Christy realized the strange report she was hearing from the direction where Ryan had gone were time-warped gunshots. She struggled to free herself from the hypnotic quality of the woman's thoughts mixing with hers. For a moment, Christy believed she was winning, pushing the woman from her mind.
Forgive me what I do. It is necessary.
Struggling to hang on to consciousness, Christy made herself think of Ryan out there, without her to cover his back. It didn't matter. She felt herself falling away.
Company's coming, John.
J.B. Dix glanced up from his position on the second floor of the building they'd chosen to wait in and looked into Mildred Wyatt's face. He followed her line of gaze as she stared through the binoculars. To the east, a broken line of dust scattered across the darkening sky.
Dear lady, that dust means only that a few riders travel hither. And there can be any number of explanations for that. They could be venturing here for shelter from the approaching tempest.
Mildred nodded reluctantly. Of medium height, Mildred carried a few extra pounds on her stocky frame that even hard living in Deathlands hadn't been able to strip from her. Multicolored beads hung in her hair, holding the locks in braided plaits. Her fatigue-style shirt and pants held ground-in patches of dirt, but the action on her ZKR Checkmate 38 pistol remained clean. Her ebony face remained emotionless, but the dust graying her cheeks and forehead gave silent witness to the wear and tear they had all experienced these past few days.
Could be, but I suppose the horsemen of the apocalypse wouldn't draw much attention either, until their horses were breathing flame up your ass.
How many do you see, Dean?
Dean Cotter shifted at the end of the building, The boy shaded his eyes as he peered at the dust cloud. His stark black, curly hair and vivid blue eyes, as well as the rangy build, clearly marked him as his father's child. The holster on his hip was empty because the Browning high power he carried was in his hand.
15, maybe 20!
Riders?
Yeah!
JB nodded. Built short and wiry, he didn't look like a man to fear, but he'd been weapons master for the traitor on Warwag 1. The steel-rimmed glasses and worn fedora almost gave him the look of a stern schoolteacher instead of a trained killer.
Horses mean some kind of vil. A man out ranging the land with no home is gonna be hard-pressed to keep a horse's belly full. 20 horses means whoever's riding them can take care of them. And they won't be out traveling unless it's important.
They're carrying some kind of flag!
See what it is?
Not yet!
Let me know!
The armorer kept focused on the terrain ahead of them, his hands wrapped securely around his Uzi. His Smith & Wesson M4000 shotgun lay strapped against his back. Going back and crossing the paths of the riders wasn't a good plan. Better to take their chances losing themselves in the detritus ahead of them. Doc shifted closer, keeping a low profile.
John Barrymore, I fear we are much too far away to offer succor to Ryan should he need it.
It's the way Ryan wanted it, Doc. We got the back door.
Well, that was then. This is now. He surely did not know about the riders closing in on this location.
We hold.
Then someone should be with Christie.
When Doc had been born in South Stratford, Vermont on February 14, 1868, he had been christened Theophilus Algernon Tanner. He'd earned a science degree at Harvard, then a doctorate at Oxford University in England. He was tall and lean, and his silver hair blew around his shoulders. His clothing was Victorian, including a frock jacket showing a green patina from age and cracked leather knee boots. He held a Lamah percussion pistol in one hand and a black walking stick with a silver lion's head in the other. Though well over 200 years old by the count of a conventional calendar, Doc's actual age was much more bizarre than that. He'd been seized from 1896 by a time-trawling experiment conducted by Operation Kronos near the end of the second millennium. Kronos had been merely one facet of the Totality concept, an organization that had explored arcane avenues for future warfare. Transported to the 1990s, Doc hadn't given up hope of being returned to his wife, Emily, and their children. In spite of the fact that his transfer from the past was the only known success, and that no one had survived any attempts at being sent back, he worked to take the chance. Ultimately, the researchers affiliated with Operation Kronos had marked Doc as a security risk and had trawled him 100 years into the future. Both experiences had left their mark on the old man, leaving him with episodes of dissociative dementia.
Christie's a big girl. She can take care of herself.
Still, I would feel better if one of us was with her.
Dad wanted it that way. So did Christie. Less risk to the rest of us if she was kept isolated, till we find out what's wrong with her.
It's gonna be just fine, Dean.
Despite his words of assurance, JB couldn't help glancing over his shoulder at the approaching column of dust from the riders. Then he cut his gaze to the sky. It was going to be a race to see what went wrong first, the arrival of the riders or the arrival of the chemstorm.